Okay, good evening. It's 8:06 p.m. in Lagos, Nigeria. My name is Queen Lizzie, and on behalf of the entire team that managed to put this together, but big up to the digital team, they did so much to make sure that today's show happens, from designing to editing to recording, all of these things, and the live stream. So big up to them, shout out to them. But welcome to the Women in Sports show event. This is an honorable reminder to every single person that we're living in a very privileged time. We're a privileged generation to see so many women in sports playing so many different sports, and we are just blessed to be here. And like somebody once said, one of the greatest athletes of all time, Serena Williams, she once said, I decided I can't pay a person to rewind time, so I may as well get over with it. So we're going to get over with it and welcome you to the show officially. But I'm not alone, because today is a very special day, a very special event. So I'm co-hosting this show with fans of women's sports, so when you get asked the question, do women's sports have fun, the answer is always yes. Always yes. And trust me, yes is a full sentence. I'll be bringing them up live on the show with me. I have Ada with me, I've got Raymond, I've got Linda, and I've got Remy that should be joining us quite soon. And we also have guests, so it's not just about my host, but also have guests covering conversation around fans engagement, sports science, yes that's a real thing, and also talking about bias and barriers that women face in sports. So it's a loaded conversation, 2 hours. You and I, my co-host and the guest, we'll never get this murky waters, because some of these conversations, it get bandied around a lot and it get lost. So we're going to be having those conversations. And once again, did I say thank you for being a part of the show? Well, I'm saying it again, thank you for being a part of the show and welcome. So we're going to be starting off with bias and barrier, because if you know, well, everybody knows, on the 8th of March is Women's Month, and it kind of spills up to the rest of the month. So we're talking all things women, we're celebrating women, and trust me, we should do that every day. But then again, we're stuck with March 8th. But the theme of this year's Women's Month, Women's Day, was about breaking the bias. And it's simple to see, it's not rocket science. Bias creeps in every area of our life, whether it's a workplace, whether it's even in our personal lives. And it takes a level of consciousness to recognize when we're being biased towards a person because of their gender, because of their color, because of their race or whatever, and just call ourselves up and say, why am I treating this person this way, or why am I reacting to the situation this way? But on today's show, we're going to be structuring that conversation around sports, around women in sports. And I'm going to introduce my co-host that will be driving the show with me, asking the right questions and sharing conversations with me. And then I'll take you to our first guest for the night. Okay, she's Amarachi Lillian, a former Super Falcons player, represented their own country. So if you ever say I pledged to Nigeria my country, there are people that really pledged to Nigeria their country and represented them. So she'll be our first guest tonight, talking about bias and barrier. And what's quite interesting about her, she'll be talking about it from both angles. She played the sport, not just in Nigeria, but in different parts of the world. She traveled around the world, not just the world. She traveled in Africa, she traveled the world. She played the game. And now she is at the other side, working as a CEO, working with players, working as an agent, working as working in sports business. So I think just being able to have her on the show to share that world of experience from both sides. I've done it here, and now I'm doing it over there. What does it look like? What does bias and barrier look like? Because that's another question. What does bias and barrier look like? Sometimes we don't recognize it. So we'll be having that conversation. I'll start off by introducing my first cohort. Well, not my first cohort. There is no number to me, but I'll start off by introducing the first cohort for the night, Ada Ube. And listen, if you've listened to Sports Salon for a long time, you should recognize Ada. She used to be on the show until she abandoned us and went away to Calabar to become a media officer for some clubs and teams. So we're glad to have her back. We're excited to have her back. So Ada, how are you doing?
I'm good, Lizzie. I'm so excited to be here. I'm excited to see you, man. It's long. And I did not abandon on a day. What follows is in the blood. Wherever we go, we represent. It's exciting to be here tonight. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be part of this. Anything that involves the development, the improvement, you know, taking women's football and whatever it is that's tied to girls' health beyond where we are right now is my thing, and I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And the great thing about her is that she did not just abandon us. She went to work with girls in sports. She has a foundation. She works as a media officer for some teams in Calabar. So that's also an experience that we'll be sharing on the show. And also, I would also welcome our other co-host for the night, Chooks. Chooks is your all things plug interior designer in Lagos, the number one guy, the big voice. When you say, when you hear that song, you want to bamba. It's Chooks they're talking about. Hello, Chooks. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Queen. Great to be on this amazing platform with you and to eventually see you in person. Ooh, for the first time.
Nice. Let me give you a little backstory. When I put out looking for co-hosts for the show, Chooks sent me a message only to realize I've had conversations before. So, yeah, happy to see you in person.
It's great to be here. Hello, Ada, and every other person who is on here. It's amazing to share this platform.
Hi.
In Lagos and everybody else listening. Welcome. Okay.
Thank you very much. Welcome. And also, I would like to welcome Linda James on the show. Linda is, we hear, somebody is a proper sports enthusiast. That's what Linda is. So, Linda, welcome to the show. How are you doing, Linda?
I'm fine. Good evening. It's good to be here.
Okay, exciting to hear from you. She keeps it very short and simple, classy. It's good to be here, and let's move on with it. And the next person, I told you, is a Full House Roundtable. Hello, Raymond. Welcome to the show. How are you doing, Raymond? Can you hear me?
Yeah, good evening, everyone. Good evening, Queen.
Okay, another very, very classic, keep it short and simple. And also my final co-host for the night, Ade Leye. Welcome to the show, Ade. How are you doing? Okay, I just saw Ade right now. Okay, well, just let's get on with it. Well, we're connecting with our co-host and guest via Zoom. Listen, 2019 showed us the new way, and we've been sticking to that new way for now. So, we're going to be starting off the conversation, like I said, around bias and barriers, fans' engagement in sports science. And I'm going to be introducing my first guest for the night. And her name is Debola Adebanjo. And Debola Adebanjo is a storyteller, a communication specialist. She's worked with big brands like the BBC, the Super Eagles. She's worked around, she's worked in and around multimedia, sports, marketing, and all of these things. And when we talk about fans' engagement, right, she's one person that I would go to for this conversation, because you understand what it means to create content for the fans that will be consumed by the fans, and also she understands what it means to consume content as a fan. So we'll be starting off our conversation tonight with Debola. Hello, Debola, can you hear me? Welcome to the show.
Yes, I can hear you, Corinne. Thank you very much.
Justice
for having
to introducing
me.
You.
I was just going to talk about that, you know. I haven't even ever introduced myself like that before. So thank you very much for buffering me up. It's great to be back on Nigerian Lagos Radio in particular. And I am quite, you know, excited to get this conversation going. And hello to everyone as well.
Hello.
Okay, they can hear you. So okay.
Hi, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, Debola.
Hi, Chooks. Good to see you.
Okay.
Good to see you too. Big fan.
Ah, you see? So big up. So I'm going to start off with the most basic question, right? Because when we have fans engagement, it can be a very simple statement, but it can also be quite a tricky statement. And it's something that you're very, very familiar with. What does it mean when maybe a club or a league or a tournament or whatever come out to say we want to engage our fans? What does fans engagement mean for clubs, for leagues, for tournaments, all of those things? What does it mean? Because
like you said, it's a very simple thing. It's something we are familiar with, but it has also developed over the years, especially with the advancement of technology. It's basically connecting with your fan, really. You know, it's an intentional process of getting your fans to actively participate in the things that are related to that specific team or that specific product you're trying to sell, as you know, as a club organization or as a sporting body or as a team or, you know, as a sports marketing agency. It's basically just about, you know, trying to get some kind of connection, whether emotionally with your fans, you know, which will down the line influence sports strategies as you know, as things move forward. I mean, we all know sports is all about the business of making money. It's all about revenue generation and that you're selling a product to an audience, but you can't just, you know, give them the product and say, here, take it. It has to be a process where you get them endeared to that product you're selling and eventually getting them to put their hands in their pocket and give you your money. So it's you know, it's a bigger topic, which I know we'll go into over, you know, the course of the conversation, and I don't want to jump into it, but it's as, you know, easy as using social media to connect. It's as easy as making the experience, not as easy to be fair, because
okay, I was going to say that, like, is that easy?
it's not that easy, to be honest. It's a very intentional process, but I'm just trying to say it's as basic, you know, as using social media to connect or making sure that the experience when they come into the grounds to watch your games, you know, is smooth, is enjoyable, is memorable, more importantly. You know, it's an advanced process of, you know, selling digital NFTs, selling fan tokens, you know, just making fan sales heard and everything. Yeah, I'm not going to pretend I know exactly how, you know, NFTs work, but I know that it's definitely taking over sports, you know, at the moment. So yes, these are the components of fan engagement primarily.
Okay, so Frankie, I think that kind of lays the foundation for us, for everybody that is listening, because most times we are fans, and when we talk about clubs and leagues, they need to respect us as fans. How do they show us that respect? Exactly. Is how they engage us, and develop basically lay the foundation for what that means. And like she said, a lot of us on social media is not like the easiest way for fans to for clubs to engage their fans, because it's like direct marketing, whether that's a word, not marketing. So I would like to ask one question, since we've basically laid that foundation, right? We're talking about women in sports. We're talking about women's sports generally. And like I said, according to what the data are telling us, the statistics are telling us, there's no better time to invest in women's sports like right now. Okay, it's not charity work. Yeah, there's return on investment, and we can see it with every team that has invested in women's sports. We can see them making money off it. And I said some time ago, that it's so big, even celebrities are getting on the actions. As much as they want to do social good, they would not put their money where they will not get it back. Listen, it's a race of being a billionaire. But how do you think women's sports can leverage fans' engagement? Because that is one thing. You can have a great product, and then you cannot communicate what that product is or how great that product is, especially a product that is vying for attention that is already taken. Because let's face it, we're not just vying for the attention of people that don't watch sports, we're also vying for the attention of sport lovers. How can women's sports take advantage of fans' engagement? What is that thing that they need to do? What is that thing that needs to be done differently or done better or improved on to kind of corner the market?
Yeah, I think it will be storytelling for me to keep your to go very straight to the question you have asked. The product cannot particularly compete with, you know, a lot of other sports content we see around. Women's football is still, as an example, is still very far from what, you know, men's football, you know, is currently, or the engagement it's currently garnering, as in line with other sports as well. We do not, lots of women, you know, sports don't quite have the facilities to also use that avenue to engage fans, to extract data, to know, you know, a range of the interests of people coming to watch them. So, I mean, you look at, I'll give you an example of the biggest team in South Africa, in Africa, for instance, the biggest women's team in Africa, I would say, and I stand to be corrected, will be the South African women's national team, owing to the recent, you know, successive they have experienced, owing to the fact that there is this awareness and development plans, you know, around the team, from how they currently have sponsors, from how they are, you know, playing international matches. I won't go on and on about them, but I think they are the biggest women's sports product in Africa at the moment, if I can use that word. But still, I do not think that if you ask an average sports fan in Africa, they won't be able to tell you three players, you know, from the team. And that's because they are just not known. They have the attention, but people can connect with them on any level. And I think that's something storytelling can fix, because women's sports generally has lots of stories we can relate with. First, the entry level into the sport is difficult. If you've ever, you know, if you know what it means to have a child, as a woman, you would realize that it's a very challenging thing, a life-changing experience. And to do that and then partake in a physical activity as competitive sports, you should know that is stuff of, I don't know, superhumans. And that is a huge story to tell, because as human beings, we like to connect with things on an emotional level. We like to share our stories, our pains, our struggle. And you will find a lot of that, you know, in women's sport. And I do not think that is properly being harnessed. I do not think that these stories that even men and everyone generally can relate to, you know, are properly being told of these female athletes. And, you know, there've been lots of research and lots of studies around fan engagement from companies like Deloitte, from clubs even partaking in their own surveys and all. And I will use the US market, for instance. People, brands, marketing agencies have realized that when they put out content on women's, you know, accounts, people engage more with the content, even more than what they get on men's social media accounts. It doesn't mean that the women's accounts have more following, but there's just more engagement. People like to hear women talk about things other than the sports they are playing, which I think is a really good attribute as well, because sports is certainly trying to diversify the kind of audience it is bringing in and gain new audiences who are going elsewhere. And that's one way to do it. So female athletes have the potential to be great brand ambassadors. They have the potential to carry the stories, you know, properly and connect with audiences. And I think that is one thing that needs to be explored the most.
Thank you very much. At this point, I'm going to bring in Amarachi
Lilian. All right.
Okay. Amarachi Lilian is a former Super Falcons player. And most of what you touched in your last comment is something that I feel like she can personally relate to it, because she's played the game. And right now, she's on the other side working as an agent, trying to get people into the game. So, Amarachi, what do you think about what Debola is saying? Does it make sense? Or would you say, no, coming from your experience, you think that things should be done differently, or you feel like these are the things that we should have been doing a long time ago, so to get us to where we need to be? Because the question is, are we where we need to be? No, that's why these conversations are necessary. I think we lost her. Hi Amarachi, can you hear me? Oh, can't see her anymore, but we'll get back to her once we're able to connect. Ada, you were going to say something.
Yes, I was going to ask a question, you know, because all of this she mentioned is relatable, but this, I think we haven't been able to effectively bring it down to the community level, where some of these girls won. I'm not educated. Some of the team management, they haven't gone through training, you know, where you say they are aware of
some of them can't even use Facebook.
Digital era, you know, they don't have an idea of what representation is, of visibility is, when it comes to the factor. So how do we apply this whole idea of fan engagement, especially when it comes to social media? Or she has mentioned NFT. We are gonna dive in very far. These people, they will understand what it means and how it relates to them. So how do we break it down to the simplest level for the girl female teams in the grassroots to participate to get the same visibility as the ones in the national team or the ones playing outside the country can get? So what do we do? What are the steps we can take to make them as effective as their supposed senior colleagues are? You
Well, I think that is, I mean, am I supposed to answer this, Queen, or you wanted to give this a go?
No, I was going to let you answer it because at the end of the day, this is huge. But the question would always ask, how do we bring it to the simplest level, like the minute level for Africa? Because at the end of the day, Africa is a peculiar market, and it's a conversation we've had a couple of times, a peculiarity of the African market in comparison to other parts of the world. How do we bring you, using our peculiarity, our music, our stories? And I think at the end of the day, it boils down to storytelling. But I'd like you to just answer that a little bit before we go on a short break. Okay, I think, hold on your thoughts. We need to go on a short break and we'll be right back. Thank you so much, guys, for listening. This is the Women in Sport event. My name is Queen Lizzie, and we'll be right back. Before we went on the break, we were having conversations around fans' engagement, and that brought up an important question, because Dibola was talking about all the ways fans, clubs, leagues are... What did I say, fans? All the way clubs, tournaments, and leagues are engaging their fans. And she was kind of asked, and she was asking about how do we bring all of these fantastic things, social media, storytelling, data, how do we bring it to the grassroots levels, to the part where some of those people don't understand how to even use Facebook to market. Well, Facebook is one of the oldest social media that is still on the stream of fame. So Devola wanted to share her thoughts on that. When she finishes, we're going to go to Chooks. I think Chooks has a question. You have something to say. We'll let Devola finish up what she was saying, and then we'll go to Chooks. So Devola, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you, Quinn. I will just touch on that real quick. I think, can you hear me, Quinn?
Okay, well, we'll wait for the audio to
Can you hear me?
We'll just get back to Chooks. Chooks, you have something to say, or you have a question to add?
Yes, I could hear Dibola. I don't know. Can you hear me?
I can hear Chooks as well. I could hear Queen loud and clear.
Cool. I can hear everybody else.
We can hear you. I don't know if you can hear us.
Audio connectivity issue.
Can you hear me now,
Queen?
We'll
go on a short break and try to fix that, and we'll be right back. This is still the Women in Sports event. Earlier in the day, I had a conversation with Dr. Non Nkubuzi. Unfortunately, she could not be live on the show, but we had a conversation around sports science, and we're going to play part of that conversation that I had with her. Listen in, and we'll be right back.
Okay, I think I've been able to set that up. So, thank you. Just want to start off with the first question that I sent to you. That basically the current state of research in sports science affecting the performance of health and women in sports, but most importantly, African women. I was reading up on something, and I realized that you were part of the research team for the first ever CAF Women Champions League that happened. And so I wanted to draw your experience from that tournament, going into that tournament. Did you find that you had to improvise with things that were available on ground, or you needed to start everything from scratch? That because the Women's Champions League was a big tournament, the first time ever. It's one of the biggest tournaments for women in Africa. So drawing from that experience, drawing from what you already do in your field as a researcher, as a sports science expert, what's the current state? Is it better than what it was 5 years ago? 5 years ago might look like a long time. Is it better than what it was 5 years ago? Does it look like it's going to get any better? Is it a situation where we still have to keep talking about it? Or is there something concrete on ground that is not just fantastic words and promises?
Well, that's a lot of questions. I think to start with, if I start with your first question, which is, how is the current state of research affecting performance in women's sport, particularly African women's sport? I would want to say the current state of sports science research in African women's sport is on the margins of global sports science discourse. So when anyone says sports science and anyone talks about doing research in women and girls in sport, the first person that comes to mind isn't an African woman in sport. The person isn't a player or formally. That means So the problem is that the statistics are very low. The amount of research that is specific on women's problems is about 6%. So global research is not specifically on women's problems. This is our mission, said men must see and die. Because our 5% research then includes men and girls. So it's a study that also has men and boys, but then it's women and girls. So that means we're looking at the university when you also say this is not a new society for women. So 6% of the time, these are being contact, 30% of the time. That is because there is a female isolated that you're making for. And that's the thing that, you know, feeding around because of squares and people, that's why it's 5 years. And that is a global. How you take it down African, other living countries, that's more. So you don't have an agent that tells you how your menstrual cycle, journey, or GC, or school, what food is to eat in 2000, or your cycle affects your disease across. Don't have that information in general to study. Now, in order to inform one, how do you that in your survival? How do you even do exercise with that you can push for your verbs? That's work with the various situations taking time, your major to a point, that's very key. So it is as if I'm wrong. So you have to take information from other people, you're moving from the country, and then you're getting information from you. My favorite analogy today is to think of the weather tests. You have all the signs. And we know that for both seasons have just come out on short and here, you know, and then winter and boo is even way. Even we know that it's been in the you know, to what it's going to the sky close, you will be because of that. And that's the other day of our being so excited. We have these people, and they just ask one in office, close to the process. My husband, you'll say that in sound, which like, or you could design that in the domain, hope you catch more. So it's more fish if you just unaccord the game, you get your medicine to your nasty cartel. And how can I share success with you and wait the whole year and your forest? I think that we link the day of research. We could be performing that. We knew that, you know, etc. is better doing mind exercises or using skills. Use that to help. You can create those marginal gains. And with that, you know, our environment is also being treated to create a change.
My time can see a fund that some was like the
every member of the Apache gang, and there's something that there's a documentary that Chide Berianugolu did on a certain female footballer. He basically broke her to the world. He did a documentary on her. I followed that story. I watched the entire documentary. He won my heart by virtue of that documentary, I must say. Chide Berry, if you're listening to this, I'm a big fan, majorly because of what
you did.
There you go. You know, so but the big question is, like every talent that has been broken, for lack of better expression, by virtue of a talent show, whatever, what is the continuity? Like, okay. What has happened after that? What is the girl herself doing for herself and her career? Now she has our eyeballs. Now she has our attention. What is she doing for herself? What has become of her? Because if she's a success story...
Are you saying that the responsibility is on her to keep promoting herself?
Well, the truth is you're biggest fan. So every other person believes in you. That's the truth. Nobody will, quote-unquote, sell your market more than you would. She was fortunate enough to have a sports broadcaster break her story into the world and basically let people know about her. What has happened since then? That is what I want to know. What has she done for herself and for her career? Because since then, I have not heard anything about her.
Okay, I think at this point, I'd like to bring in Debola, because this is a conversation that we were going to touch on, right? Not just getting the traction, but keeping the traction and keeping the momentum. Debola, would you like to jump in here?
Yeah, I was just going to give another context to what Chooks just said about, you know, the responsibility being on the player to keep, you know, gaining that traction and, you know, the big question of what she has done afterwards. I don't quite think that it is her responsibility. Her responsibility is to keep playing football. I mean, let's look at responsibility in two ways. Someone has put her out there to the world. Yes, she has. She could always, you know, keep sharing her stories, keep using social media, which is the most easily accessible tool to connect to the audience that I've, you know, just been exposed to her. I totally agree. But mostly, I think sports is about development. It's about people following growth and a story. And she needs to keep playing. She needs to perhaps join a new club. She needs to maybe get a deal abroad, maybe not even abroad, or just play in a functioning league, which is what I'm just trying to say. I mean, the environment is not enabling for that. If she was a league player in not even the end of UFL,
sorry to quote you off here, but we have to go on a break at this point. We'll be right back. I'm going right back to the conversation before we went on the break. Debola was breaking down what it means, right? Fan engagement, whose responsibility is, just break down the question, to promote themselves. Does it lie on the player? Because at the end of the day, we'll say it's the player's job to play. And is the promoter's job to promote you? And boxing is a classic example. Whenever there is a bout, you just have to make sure you trash talk a bit and the promoters do their thing and you go in and you knock people out. So understanding it in that basic level, we can continue the conversation. Is it on the players? Because women in sports, are we putting too much responsibility on them? It's not just enough to play and be professional. You have to promote yourself. You have to market yourself. You have to be your own agent. You have to be your social media manager. Why they can't handle all of these things sometimes? But is it not too much for them to bear? Debola, you might want to finish that conversation you were having before. The thing you were saying before we went on the break. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just trying to reference this particular athlete and give Chooks another context of it would have been hard for Chinese experiences interesting to share audiences. But except, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't even think she was playing in any league or she has had a functioning system around her to continue, you know, playing. But, I mean, going back to something you mentioned as well, I do think going by the landscape, athletes, especially women in sports, have a personal responsibility as well to put themselves out there. It's not because they have to do it, but it's just, you know, the way the environment is. The women's sports is always, you know, on the back burner. Mm-hmm. So the best way to, you know, assist yourself, putting yourself out there to people, is also doing it yourself. And it's quite challenging, to be fair. There is an athlete I spoke to recently. She's a volleyball player. I know I'm bringing up, you know, another sport that is not popular, but she is an Olympic medalist, plays for the USA. She recently just joined one of the top volleyball clubs here in Italy. And I asked her about what her sponsorship and brand's portfolio was like. And, you know, as for an athlete who is at the top of a game in that sport, she said she didn't quite have, you know, brand endorsements and things like that. And I asked if she just wasn't doing these things for herself. And she said, look, I would have loved to do it, but there's just so much to do when I'm trying to concentrate on the sport. And that they probably, as athletes, need people who can be the middlemen, you know, bridging that gap they need between, you know, athletes and brands, which is something I'm doing, but I'm not going to cheap plug in myself right now. Okay, I just did.
Okay.
But if women, you know, athletes do have the time, it will be something, you know, they need to do, especially if you have an active league, you have an active sport you're playing. If you're playing in a top league as a footballer in Europe or anywhere really, and you have, you know, a schedule where you're going to training, you're featuring in games in week in, week out, there is nothing stopping you from using social media, you know, to put yourself out there. And we can bring it back home to, you know, all the sports teams we have around here. I think the onus is on clubs. The onus is on, you know, whom you've appointed to be the media head for that team. The onus also is on the players themselves to put themselves out there in any little capacity and build it over time, because it certainly has its rewards. Fans all over the world really want the same thing, really. They want to see highlights. They want to see behind the scenes. They want to see compelling stories. They want to see what you're doing, what you're eating, how you're training. And it's just regular fan behavior. And if you have that content at your disposal, I really think that, you know, a lot of teams, and a lot of women particularly, can do better in putting themselves out there, because then you could make yourself sellable to brands, you know, to sponsors in the future. You could create your own little community and then monetize that community. It eventually comes back to money. I sadly have to say, but first you need to build a community. And Amarachi's example is the most prominent one we've had so far. She's played in a league where a lot of people wouldn't even expect, you know, the players to have that following, but she's talked about how quite a number of people are interested or were interested in her career. So who are these people? Where do they come from? How much do they have in their pockets? And I know I'm sounding so, yeah, you know, bringing the whole capitalism thing, but it's actually important. You know, how much are they willing to spend on a jersey? Wow. Or how much are they willing to spend on a merchandise that is branded with her name? Are the things that we need to start looking at, especially for alternative means of funding for the game that is already so, you know, underfunded by the authorities.
Okay, so talking about merchandise,
I have a question.
Okay, go on.
Okay, I wanted to, Amarachi, please, I wanted to answer this question or give us an idea of what it is like tying fan engagement outside of active sports playing, you know, and what you're doing now. What has the relationship been like for you when it concerns fan engagement and you retiring from active play, you know, because is there a lifespan to this thing? Is there a point where you get to and it's like,
when
okay, there's
not so much goodwill you have from your fans?
You exhaust the goodwill you have with the fans. Is there a point you get to, you know, and what would you do after that? Because you're one in a million of female football stars who are not actively playing. But then what keeps you going after all of the glitz, the glamour, the fame, the engagement with fans and all of that? So that's important. It's something I think we should talk about, and we should have an idea of what it's like or what it has been like for you and the rest of it.
Okay, what keeps me going after the fans engagement, after the game, right? Yeah? Can you hear me properly?
No.
I think your network is poor, okay. But you can go on.
So, first of all, I wanted to say something about what Demola said. I wanted to do this and say something about what Demola said. Players, especially, let's talk about the players promoting themselves. You know, majority of these players can't even afford, or majority at this stage don't even have phone or cannot afford data to keep themselves updated on social media. The majority of these players, as much as is an newspaper group as an example, on daily basis, I try to talk to these players, both male or female players, how to get it done better. Find out that there are a lot of difficulties. Difficulties they face to try to market themselves or try to figure out themselves in the timeline. For example, there's a lot of opportunity when players, my people's contact or my partners want player to come and have a view outside the country. And then the request of something like a video or an action pictures, and that these players don't have things like that. You know, trying to let them get it as soon as possible so that they will be able to sit or fit in the opportunity that is available. It's a lot of time. There's a lot to do on players trying to manage themselves. It is actually something very important because I've seen a situation where few players that are just keeping in order of marketing themselves and trying to put themselves out there, they've got an opportunity to move better level, but you know, it's something we still have to get back to keep pushing and encouraging, because the majority, especially the female players, there's a lot to do about the majority of them and understand the importance of actually pushing themselves to get better. Can I ask you a question that I asked? It's Jason, you have something to tell me about. Yes, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I would like you to get down with your thoughts because there's something that I would like to ask, being a former professional footballer, but I want to be sure that you're done.
Okay. I'm trying to catch up with her last question, but it seems I missed it again. Maybe she will repeat what you asked me yours.
Okay. So can I go with my question now?
Yes, please.
Okay, so I'm looking at, obviously, the Super Eagles are going to be playing this weekend. That's the new national team. They're going to be playing this weekend in the World Cup qualifiers, doubleheader against Ghana. Now, in the build up to that game, you find that we've had a ton of foreign-born players born abroad who are basically fighting each other just to get their shirt in the Super Eagles. Recently, I have fallen in love with this lady, Ashley Lamptey. I don't know if you've heard about her. So I absolutely fell in love with that girl. The two games she has played, I think she has only two caps, if memory serves me right. So there's something that they do. There's something that they do after every game where they, you know, where they surround her and then they start playing music and she's dancing and everything. What can the Super Falcons, or I'm putting this across all the national team now, what can we do to attract players that were born outside the country to want to come and represent players with Nigerian parents or Nigerian roots? How can we make the Nigerian brand more attractive?
Well, I don't think there is much. Most of these players that are not born in my country.
Amashi, can you hear me?
Problems
with your network. Could you try reconnecting back again so we can have we can hear the conversation better and clearer? Because I really want to hear what you're saying, but then it's a struggle to hear you from our end. Maybe you could go up for a bit.
Yeah, I also can't hear her.
Yeah, it's slightly better, but then you can go on.
Players that are not born in Nigeria, trying to work with the most important thing is if
it's
the player.
It's still
the same.
Sorry, the network is really, really, really poor from that end. We'll try to maybe reconnect again and see if it's better. But coming up from what Chuk says, right, and I also want to draw something in because it also falls into the conversation I had with Dr. Nun, and it also falls into some of the statistics that she gave, listening to the part of that conversation that we've played already, where she said that when it comes to sports science, just 6% of research is done for women. Then when you talk about African women, you take that 6% and you take it even further. It's very abysmal. And it's like the focus is what you're trying to do. A big part of her research, aside from looking how menstrual cycle affects the African female sport athletes, right, is how we can look at homegrown solution for homegrown needs. She mentioned things like how the weather, she gave an example of the weather, how food, how all of those things affect the way we play. And when Trooks talked about attracting foreign players to play for the Super Falcons, is something that crossed my mind. I am happy when we have like a global team, right? The thing is, the world is so globalized that you don't expect the team to be made up of just the players that live in that country. But are we at the what's the word now? Are we at the brink of essentially loaning out our entire team, that the only people that can complain for us, not because they are not Nigerians, but because we're unable to grow our league, we're unable to invest in home players, we're unable to invest in home teams. We can always just rely on people that have gone out through blood, sweat and tears and the help of other countries, train and groom themselves. We're just going to wait for them to come play for us. Because at the end of the day, when we look at all of this conversation, it boils down to investment, like what the Bala say. It might be capitalism, but then again, is money. If you don't put in money, it's not going to grow. Passion and love and commitment is not just enough. How do we make sure that in all of these things, we're looking at the homegrown thing? We're investing in building stadiums, facilities, these players, in their lives, in their kits. It was just the last World Cup in France, the 2019 World Cup in France, that the women had a jersey that was made for them for the first time. It was not just a hand-me-down from the men's team like they used to get in the previous tournament. And all of these things might seem quite small, but then they are big in the scheme of things, because it affects productivity, affects performance, it affects investment. Like, who is going to buy a jersey with Amarachi's name at the back, for example, if Amarachi does not even have a jersey that was made for her to play the sports professionally in the first place? So I like us for us, because the science, the engagement, the bias, the barrier, they're all part of this conversation. They tie in together. So I think while we're having this conversation, let us bear that in mind, because we cannot grow one and leave the other. We're going to have something that is lopsided. I think Amarachi is back now. Maybe you can continue with your answer to Chuk's and Ada's question.
Oh. Are you there? Can you hear me? I'm here. Okay. But your question, and then I was answering, I think those outside Nigeria, I mean, the players born outside Nigeria can actually kill in easily, depending on their performances in their previous. Because it's their performances that actually bring them out to do better. You know? Their performances in their previous club would make the board look at the player and say, "Oh wow, this is a Nigerian blood. We need to bring her into it." Just like you talked about that Ashley. From her debut, everybody's have seen that she's actually very good, and there was no doubt. Even her second match, she did perfectly well.
I think the network is still quite poor. Before we go on, I just want to say you can also join us live on Facebook at Nigeria Info 99.3, on YouTube at Nigeria Info FM. You can join the conversation on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM and on Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos. It's a women in sports event. We'll be having conversations around fan engagement, science, bias, and barriers, how all of these things come together and how we can essentially break the bias, break into the science, and also engage the fans even better. While Amarachi is trying to get her network fixed, I would like to bring Debola into this thing, right? Because you talked about data, you talked about some of those things, see? And in my conversation with Dr. Nunn, data was something that came up quite a lot. And it was something that she said quite firmly. If we don't do research focused on African women, on African actors specifically, I remember asking her, does it not matter if it doesn't, women are women everywhere. We have two breasts, two legs, and all of this thing. Does it not matter if the research, you don't have to be African or black, as long as there's a woman, can it not be applied for us? And she said, well, while you can do that, you create a situation where things will not always work. Why am I working this instance? It might not always work in that instance. It's about finding situation and stories and science, basically, the science and data that works for us specifically. And a huge part of what we've talked about, what we've been talking about, is storytelling. Amarachi did that beautifully when she shared her experience in the Gambian League. That is beautiful storytelling. And if somebody should ask you, how can you prove to me that fans are interested in sports? That example puts it all into perspective. How can we use the data better and make sure that we are not just using data for global audience, but using data for an African audience to grow our African thing? Debola, can you hear me? I think we've lost Debola. Okay, Zoom is really zooming us. But then again, I think I'd like to bring in Adelia in at this part of the conversation, because when Chus was talking about Ashley, I heard you saying some things. Do you have thoughts about bringing in more foreign-based players into the Super Falcons, having them play more for us, having more influx of foreign-based players, the way we're seeing with the Super Eagles, which is a good thing, right? Right now, they're looking like one of the strongest teams going into the World Cup players and all of that. I'd like to hear your thoughts around that. Adelaide, can you hear me? Okay.
I can hear you.
Okay, so please go ahead.
Should I go ahead, ma?
Yes, please.
I have a question.
Go. Yeah, please.
Yeah, okay. I hear you.
Okay. Thank you very much for the invite. So I would like to ask the ex-baller, based on the fact that she has played the game right from time, I would like to ask her experience going from the start of her career. How was she able to cope with the social pressures and gender bias based on women, especially the fact that young girls are not considered fit to play football? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
So the fact that young girls are not that fit to play football, there's a stereotype that you have to be a tomboy, you have to be like a man to play football. So how was she able to cope with those gender biases, and how was she able to live through all those things and carve a niche for herself? So I'd like to ask for address that part of gender bias placed on young girls.
Okay, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, that's actually a good question. And if I should start to talk about it, all the experiences, the challenges, it's going to take us another day. But I'm just going to make it short. It was actually a difficult thing breaking into, even from family, the gender bias. My family was like, okay, you're not going to play football. It's not a woman. As a matter of fact, it's an abomination. You know, and then when I left the challenges of my family, I tried to break through, then step out. You know, and you know when you're physically strong, because of training, a lot of people see you as a different person. They call you a lot of names, and but it's only going to affect you when you are not focused on what you're doing. And then coming to how other people see it, even in the team where you belong, there's a lot of challenges for some of the coaches and not the coaches, you know. And then when you say, let me not talk about the part of some of the coaches trying to do one or two things to demoralize someone's emotion.
Yes,
but
very, very important.
Yeah, it's really, that's why I said if we start to talk about it today, it's not something we're going to, but of course, I'm sure we're going to be on this once in a while. So there's a lot of, it's really long, but even at my age, sometimes when I feel like dressing freely, walking along the street, some people are still saying, what's wrong with her? Why is she like this? And does she want to be? But inside of me, I'm like, I felt like I'm an angel with a pure heart, but you see what people think about you because you maybe you've played soccer or maybe you're physically a little bit tough than what they expected you to be as a woman and other. So there are a lot of things we have to say about these things. And I don't know if time will permit us to go in details to talk about it. But I actually appreciate that question because it's very important. And then talking about the conscious, let me just say a little bit of this, which is actually very important. When a situation whereby as a female player, you are in a position to get to a particular position and you will be deprived because someone somewhere is expecting you to do something or compromise your standard before you get an opportunity.
Shelly, let's not sugarcoat it. They want you to sleep with them. Let's not say
yes,
compromise.
Yeah. Yes. Please be as open as possible.
Yeah. So even on my Facebook page group last week, a girl came up to my inbox and told me she has lost interest in playing football. I made a post about it two times and I mentioned the state of that girl, where she's located, and few coaches took it up to themselves to go to that, because a particular coach in that state, there are only two female teams in that state. One, that is playing the Premier League, and then the amateur club where the girls gather to train. But the coaches will not let some of these girls train until they have their way. Some of the coaches ask them that they must press their breast in the field there before they go
location, so people will beware, predators, keep your daughters away from them. You can understand why some parents don't want their daughters in sport because of people like this. And when we come back, we have to go on another short break. When we come back, I think I'm going to be playing part of my conversation with Dr. Noor, because this is something that we also talked about, how we can break some of those barriers. This is the Women's in Sports event. Yeah. We'll be right back. Before we went on the break, she was talking about how abuse thrives in sports. And I know this is not breaking news. This is not foreign conversation. It's something that we are well and aware of. It's something that, we try to look away sometimes so it doesn't matter, the beautiful game. But then again, whether you pay attention or not, if it exists, it exists. At this point, I'd like to bring in Linda into the conversation, talking a little bit more about fan engagement before we go back to my interview with Dr. Noor. Linda, as a sports fan, right, you enjoy watching sports. What has been your experience as a fan? Because this is something I like to ask people. I also ask myself, because I'm a sports fan, how often when I have to make a decision between this and this, between watching this and this, or when I see a marketing campaign from a company, or when I see a marketing campaign from a league, from a team, how often do I see women's sports? How often do I get the option to choose women's sports? And I know you consume a lot of sports, you consume a lot of football. What has your experience been?
Okay, so actually for me, how often I see women's sport adverts or marketing, it's very low. I feel that if they can target the social media, because most women spend their time looking at social media, so if they can target social media to bring up ads and other things for people to see, that would draw people's attention more to women's sports than men's sports.
Fight you for saying women's sports than men's sports. We are not fight dragging things. You're just saying give us attention.
Give us attention. Exactly. That's the right word. Give us attention.
Okay. So before we go back to our conversation, I'd like to play a bit more of the interview I had with Dr. Noor coming into this conversation tonight. So guys, please listen up.
Something that your research, your work focuses on is a menstrual cycle, mm-hmm. and how it affects women's health, especially in sports science. Mm-hmm. And most times, for most girls, right, not most girls, we've seen young girls start their periods as early as 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And that is usually the height of the active years as a child or as teenagers, but also unfortunately, mm-hmm. the research and statistics have shown that that is when most girls begin to drop off from sports, because then your mm-hmm. body begins to change. A lot of things is different about you. And most mm-hmm. times there is no environment to encourage growth or to even help them adjust in their new body, in their new system. And for me, I'm particularly interested in how, but some of those girls continue, and you mentioned things like contraception and all of these things, using these things to understand women's body and manage them in sports. I've seen situations where some girls that are really, really interested in sports continue, but then they go ahead and self-medicate, or they have their coaches or all of those people give them things to suppress their periods and their hormones so they can play, they can continue to play. And most times these things don't go on for very long. What is the impact? Because you see this in low, like you mentioned, in low income countries or where there is no access to care. So
we need to understand the issue biology, understand the structure. From a biological perspective, can we deny it for heat? You know, that is that you pay with what you want to heat puberty. In some cultures, you get some heat simply. So that it makes you worse than 2 weeks and other people, so you are not too, because that's not what I want to do. But I don't do this. That in certain restrictions, you know, I think if we understand that for some people, when you hit a particular milestone in life, the following changes need to happen, we need to then accommodate them in sport. But currently our sporting facilities and our sporting philosophies are not taking that into account. We're using a cookie cutter approach where if it works for this particular person, then it has to work for the next person. If they come with their own variation, if they come and say, no, I can't expose my thighs, then instead of creating a swimming environment, for example, that accommodates them and allows them to swim in modesty, we then just exclude them altogether. And again, most of those are going to affect girls more than boys.
You know, the question that comes to mind, right, traditionally, and I'm not just saying this based on, it's something that has gone through over time, it's something that we've seen that today, because if you read a number of medical papers or you follow some medical news, you hear that historically Africans, Black people, have always been used as guinea pigs for science and research, and it kind of makes them very skeptical coming out to say when they call out for maybe they are doing a study and they call out for people to come. You usually find that Black people, Africans are usually not very chomped about going, because historically we've been used that, for a better word, lab rats. So and when these questions come up, the questions most people would ask is, who are the people leading this research? What are the faces of the people leading this research? Because I want to know that I can trust them. I want to know that they have my back. I want to know that the data they're collecting from me, the things that I'm, the information I'm giving them will be honored. I will be honored as a person, and whatever result is gotten from this research will be beneficial to me, which is where you step in, because I know you're one of the very few Black African women in the industry sports science, and most of what you do is focused on African women, and you have founded a company with other other experts in the field, and you're constantly talking about this issue, your research, you put up papers. So could you give us an idea of what your job is like, what the field is like for you? Because there are very, very few African women in your field. So, because I like to say, all this fantastic news, sign me up. I want to be part of that study. But I also want to know that whoever is studying me would understand it, because you mentioned quite a number of things, the social factor, the cultural factor, and all of these things, most times respected to fit into situations rather than situations fitting into our needs. So could you give us an idea of how your work has been able to break down some of these biases and barriers, because that is what they are, and just give the people that really need this, the knowledge, the data, access to which are Black African women like myself living in Africa, interested in sports, interested in doing sports and understanding how it affects me, or how it will affect me. maybe my daughter that might want to play sports.
Yeah, I think you are very right in saying historically, and we have so many examples of African people and people from low and middle income countries in particular being used as guinea pigs for research, you know, so the big monies and the big researchers would come from wherever, bring in the money, do a study. And for the most part, it is a study that they wouldn't be able to, under any circumstances, do in their countries of origin, but then they're allowed to do it in Africa. And then when they're done, they take the data away. If it's something that can be patented, it becomes theirs. They make the money out of it. And then, you know, when it's now patented, the Africans still need to buy it, you know? So it was, but I think hopefully we are past that, because I think we now have stricter ethical controls on the continent and in most areas of the world, wherein researchers cannot just come in and be fly-by-night researchers. They just come in with their fancy dollars, drive in, do the research, and then leave. So now, before you can do a study on humans or even in animals, that study needs to be passed by an ethical review board or an institutional review board that looks at things like that. What are the risks of the study to the participants? What are the benefits of the study to the participants? Why are you doing the study in the first place? So you need to justify why you're doing this study. And these boards tend to be, they're populated by your bioethicists, they're populated by scientists in the field, they're populated by laymen, you have religious leaders, so they can look at the study from those various perspectives before you are allowed to actually conduct that study. So I hope that allays some fears in people who might want to become.
Okay, thank you so much for sticking around with us, guys. That is Dr. Nun talking about science research and how, yeah, historically, it hasn't been all fun and games for us. And I'm going to go back to Amarachi again. And this is like an open-end question. When you were active, did you have somebody, or were there people watching out for your nutrition, watching out for your health, what you ate? Was there provisions for that, things that were specific to you as a female athlete and not just a copy and paste from what the guys were doing?
And Lizzie, sorry, after that question, I have a question in that line, but yeah, related to the whole sexual abuse issue directed at our wonderful guest.
I think the network is getting in the way again. I can see her, but I can't hear her.
I can hear you. Please, can I make a comment?
Okay, yes, please go ahead, Adelia.
Okay, so I would like to say that based on women football, we have to actually deal with the gender issues first. Then also, we have to make it commercially viable.
But it first, is commercially
let's
viable.
Look at, it is not commercially viable in Nigeria compared to other European countries. You can see what is happening in the US. Natalia Portman just had to look for celebrities to join up in a franchise with her, and she caught up with Dwayne Wade, his wife, that's the
bring up
union
here,
and
right.
all those people.
I'm going to
but
bring
in
up
Nigeria,
sorry, Adelaya, before you go on, okay. Like I would like to bring up something that I would like you to tie in with the rest of your talk, because we're running out of time. When you say make all it right. commercially viable, is in terms of winning medals, is in terms of winning tournaments, is in terms of qualifying for tournaments, what does commercially viable looks like to you?
Okay, I would say that like let's say the Super Falcons now. Super Falcons have done everything. We are nine-time champions of Africa. It's only two we've not won out of the 11. And if we look at it, we succeeded in a lot of things, but we have like sponsors have to come in. The Super Eagles will play, and we'll see that all the sponsors, I won't mention them, they will sponsor for a goal for a if mass bonuses,
so it's a case of bias as opposed to a case of quality.
There's bias in sponsorship. If all the sponsors can come in and support the women game, also can say that okay, we'll support them.
So it's
them
a sponsorship
with,
bias. It's fund. A support bias, it, and not it, that they are not doing their like, job and they are not commercially viable.
Okay, bias. Everyone is awful.
We're losing you, Adeleye. The network has been so poor.
Focus on the...
Okay, and we'll get back to Adeleye while we try to sort that. Ada, you were saying something around...
The last I checked, you've not won anything since then, but this lady's chicken to play, and even...
Adeleye, if you can hear me, I think your network is quite poor. You could try sort that out a bit from your end while we continue the conversation, because we are running out of time. Ada, you were saying something around sexual abuse, which was a conversation we were having before we went on the break and then came back with our interview with Dr. Noor.
Okay.
How? Because, and I know you work in the media space. Yes, I can hear you, Ada. You work in the media space. You work with young girls in sports. You work with young girls outside sports. And sexual abuse is an issue that you deal with on a daily basis. How prominent is that? How prominent is it in your line of duty as a media officer? How often do you see it? And yes, I can hear you. So what are the barriers in dealing with that?
Okay, so not bad. I've had a case where a young girl has been sexually abused by her coach since she was 14 years old. So she joined the team when she was 12, and so things were happening. She couldn't say anything up until when the young man or whatever, or her coach at that time, started abusing her, up until when she got to 21 years old.
Wow. Do we know the name of this team?
But this is the question I wanted to ask.
I don't know.
I'll send it to you.
We need to say it out. Like, I may be, I have the address here. I just want to be sure I'm not putting my money where I should not be.
You know, sexual abuse is a particularly special and peculiar case when it comes to the girls. Now, in your days, did you have, because this is what my foundation ship, you know, we provide this opportunity where may young ladies can talk to mentors about whatever it is they're going through, you know, to help them with the process and all of that. Did you have people in your team or like a coach or a senior colleague, a marketer, can you hear me, who you could confide in, you could talk to about, aside sexual abuse, about emotional issues at that time? Did you have people you could confide in? Because this is particular, especially to the girl vision, there's no provision for that. You know, from the home front, it is hard enough for them. Then you go out to do something that you know you can gain from, can benefit from, that you enjoy doing, but you don't have who to talk to when you have issues like this. So did you have somebody at that time, a coach, a special friend you could confide in about these issues? That's one. Secondly, right now, is there a disciplinary body of the Nigerian Football Federation or within the teams or the league or whatever, who have come together to say issues that are peculiar to the girls have, like sexual abuse?
I think I need to come in here because we're having issues with getting through with Amarachi. I think when it comes...
I can hear you now. Let's actually cut me off.
Okay, Adeleye, we'll get back to you. Was asking Amarachi some questions. I needed to jump in because I think the network issues is happening everywhere. I think when it comes to the disciplinary bodies, we have to deal with cases like sexual abuse. I think it's the same body that deal with issues of fraud and all of those things. Do we have a specific system in the Nigerian football system, in the Nigerian sports space that addresses sexual abuse of young girls in sports? I really don't think so. But yeah, it's something that I'd like Amarachi to share experience in, because she mentioned it. Right now, she works as an agent. She works as a studio coach, right? She organizes little tournaments where people, not just where both male and female footballers can come show their talent and hopefully get poached. Yeah, that's the word now. Get poached by agents and go play for teams proper and start of their career. And these are things that pop up in this conversation. Hopefully when she's able to get back, she can answer some of that question. But we're running out of time, and because of that, I'm going to be rounding up this conversation. Unfortunately, you think 2 hours is a long time, eh? It's not really a long time. We have to be rounding up the conversation. And I'm going to be asking some of my co-hosts like open-ended questions. Well, let's just keep it short and simple. And the thing is, right? As you and it's a question that applies to everybody, and so please, if your network allows you, go ahead and answer. As a fan, because we're not just here as hosts of today's show, we are also fan of women's football. What is one thing that you think needs to be done if they should ask you and say, you give me one thing you need, you think needs to be done in women's sports to make sure that the fantastic products and quality that they have is easier for people to see and engage in and just get out there? Because I am not, the question is not even an issue of quality. The quality is there. We're not going to argue that week in, week out, they come in, they score the goals, they break the records, they do. What is one thing that you think needs to be done for people to see that do that they are doing? That's not proper English, but let's go with that.
Sorry, can I come in quickly?
Yes, please. If you can hear me, go ahead.
I'll reiterate again. I think it's sponsorship that matters. They've done all they could do in all sports. The Tigers have won the last three championships. We can see that even in football, we've won all we could win. In tennis, in badminton, in Dokas Adichokwu is number one in Africa. In athletics, we have a lot of athletes doing well. Tobi Amusan, Ese Bumi. So there is the quality there, but people need to sponsor. People need to believe in what these women can do. We need to actually come in.
We need to see what they are doing to believe that they are doing it.
Yes, we need brands to sponsor this. Our NWFL, Aisha Falodi is doing a fantastic job, but we need more sponsors to see that, yes, we can play. The likes of Rivers Angels, the likes of Edo Queens, FC Robo, they are playing well. And if we can sponsor them, they will go to the CAF Champions League and they will play well. Like last year, Rivers Angels captured in the first stage. So if we could, if they saw more sponsors, if people coming into the game and like brand celebrities try to support, even Serena Williams, Dwayne Wade, MJ Blige could come in and
Natalie Portman,
open a franchise.
If they can come together, we
need money, just sponsor. Like, we'll see more players.
Okay, thank you, Adele. Yeah, we need to move on to other people. So, in short, Adele is saying, bring your money, give us your money. Chooks, I think we should get to you. Running out of time. Quickly, what is one thing for you? Are you also the money man?
I could tell and sense the passion in Adele's voice. It's really, really contagious. And it's a very good thing to see that men are loving women's football and women's sports in general.
Oh, my God. I'm a huge CFC women supporter.
You know, but from my end,
I don't support your CFC.
from my end, personally, I would like to say visibility on social media, visibility on terrestrial media. You know, the NPFL have this app that they have going. I don't know how that's doing at the moment, because I stopped using it after I started getting the issues.
Wow.
But then if they can have something, it might not necessarily be not in watching. That line, but anything that ensures visibility, because like we already made clear, it is not the lack of raw material, so to speak. It is not the lack of talent. Wow. It is not the lack of skill. It is not the lack of creativity or the finesse or whatever it is that these girls can do to attract the brands, the sponsorship, and all these things that Adeleye is so vehemently clamoring for. It is the fact that we don't see what we want to buy. I'm a businessman. I will not put my money into something that I do not see.
You won't buy.
Yes. Okay. You know, there's something they say in market circles. I go first job.
Okay.
Pardon
okay.
my lingo.
No, wahala. We get it. Yeah, thank you. So we've talked
you
money,
see what it is,
investment, visibility. Thank you. So Ada, quickly, running out of time. 30 seconds. What do you want to see more of?
Please, there's a lot of talent down the community that we need to take advantage of. Yes, there'll be the pace of visibility and all whatnot. We shouldn't neglect the future, because when these people have grown and they've left the stage, who will continue? So there should be a system for continuity.
Continuity.
What I think. That's what I want.
Okay. So thank you very much. I think we lost that at that there. So I think the main thing has been it did there, but we need to make it shine. We need to make it show. Okay, so Linda, what would you like to see? What is that one bang and dang that you would like to see?
Okay, for me, it has to do with enlightening and informing the general public why a girl child to participate in sports. And this we can do by media shows, TV, and we can also create seminars for their parents to also know that, okay, if my child participates in this, this is what she stands to gain. So to encourage the parents to also make their children to want to participate in sports as a woman.
Thank you. That's fantastic, because that's the science we're talking about. Something Dr. Noor broke down beautifully, right? The science out there, the advantages to this thing, the level to this thing. And hopefully we'll be able to talk to Amarachi one final time before we go. You've seen it all. You've done it all. What is one thing you'd like to see more of? An improvement from when you were active? If you can, if your network will let you, please go. Oh, I can hear her talking, but I can't hear. It's not coming out.
Oh.
Oh, unfortunately, we're running out of time. It's not just coming out.
Can't.
Yeah. So, but I think on behalf of everybody that joined in, my guests that were able to connect via Zoom, my guests that were able to be interviewed
Thank
before
you.
The show, and also my co-host Adeleye Adechukwu, James, and Raymond. Raymond was on for a while, but then I kept looking out for Raymond. I could not find him. I'm so, so sorry. The network has been horrible today, but somehow for the past 2 hours, we've managed to pull through. And also from my end, the one thing that I really like to see, when we talk about sports, is not just what happened on the field of play. It was happening outside it. So when it comes to management, when it comes to science, when it comes to research and all of these things, I would like, when it comes to the medicine, I would like, when it comes to physiotherapy, when it comes to coaching, I would like to see more girls, more women involved in it. Because I think for abuse to thrive, you need access. So we need to cut some access that some of these abusers have, and just make sure that it's open. It's an open field, it's an open place. So while I want to see more girls actively playing sports, going into their lives as older women, right? You want to actively play sports. I also want to see more girls and women in managerial position, medical position, and just decision-making position. I should know as a young girl, yeah, maybe I don't have talents to play ball very well, or like Azizat, but I feel coach, I feel talk. So I like to see that. So
that's the next one best.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that has been our package. I hope that we've given you something that has been worth the past 2 hours of your time. Thank you so much to everybody that listened to us during my Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and all of that. We appreciate you. And to the amazing digital team, and also to somebody that has been pressing all the correct buttons and trying not to go crazy in the city.
Thank you to Samwise.
Yeah, so thank you every single person. And my name is Queen Lizzie, and hopefully seeing you on Sunday. Good night. This has been our show.